and welcome to another very special episode of Let Me Explain You a Thing. My name is Andrew, and this is the podcast where I talk extemporaneously on a subject I know a decent amount about. Usually on my drive to or from work, which is the case today, so apologies for road noise. And today, I thought I would talk a little bit about a game that I've been kind of getting back into. Ever since the passing of Akira Toriyama in March, I've been getting back into my Dragon Ball Z era. I've been watching Dragon Ball Z Kai with my fiance, and it's been a lot of fun to kind of revisit the goofiness and exaggeratedness of this anime. But beyond that, I was also reminded of a true gem of a video game that I own, that honestly is worth a look, I think, for anyone who's interested in turn-based strategy games. I don't know where you might find it online. I'm sure there are emulators out there that you don't need to, like, buy a cartridge or a Game Boy Color, because it is a Game Boy Color game. And that game is Dragon Ball Z Legendary Super Warriors. What a nuts title. But basically, it's a card game in the sense that I think these were, like, this is kind of a micro genre of video games back in the early 2000s, because this game came out, I want to say, in 2002. For the Game Boy Color. It was probably one of the last titles for the Game Boy Color, because, as I recall, maybe not one of the last, but as I recall, Dragon Ball Z The Legacy of Goku came out in, I want to say, 2003, and that game had a pretty big marketing campaign behind it. Like, I remember seeing commercials on, like, you know, Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network. There were, like, ads in some of the, like, kid magazines that I read. in comic books and stuff like that. Whereas Legendary Super Warriors, I don't even know how I learned about it first, because I think what happened was I was interested in finding video games for, this is just a bit like a you know, personal anecdote aside, but I was interested in finding video games to explore my growing passion for TV shows like Dragon Ball Z. I remember I watched Dragon Ball Z when it was on Toonami in, like, the late 90s, like 98, 99. Watch, like, the Saiyan saga into the Namek and Frieza sagas. And then I kind of, like, lost track of it during the Android and Cell sagas. I don't know if I, like, just kind of had other things I was interested in at the time or what. Like, you know, kid attention spans. Then I got back into Dragon Ball Z in a big way, and, like, yeah, I think 2002 is about the right time. I remember posing my Tahu Nuva Bionicle that I had, like, recently finished. I was still totally enamored by on, like, the coffee table watching. I have this, like, very vivid memory of, like, watching some episode of Dragon Ball Z where, like, Bulma takes everyone up in, like, a helicopter, and it's during, like, the Teen Gohan arc when he's the Great Saiyan Man. I could probably pinpoint to, you know, the month when that moment, you know, occurred based on, like, the broadcast history of the show, but anyway, yeah, so I was back into Dragon Ball Z. I was looking for video games to explore these passions. I remember looking into, like, is there a Rurouni Kenshin video game? There was, at the time. It was just, like, a fighting game that was only released in Japan. Rats. I was also, I should say, like, a big game FAQs head. That was kind of my first experience with like an internet message board as a kid, and I relied on game FAQs, or as I called it, game facts. Still do, honestly. I relied on game facts for like any kind of like guides for unlocking characters and stuff, because as you may or may not know, depending on how old you are or how recently you started really getting into video games used to not hold your hand with stuff like this. Like, you just had to, and this was part of the replay value. It's not that they, you know, video games had, like, procedurally generated, you know, open world areas or, like, thousands of hours of, like, story or millions of words in in-game books like Skyrim or something that you could read and explore. Like, video games had, you know, they kind of did the thing they did, and you know, that was it. And like, this was also at a time when video games were kind of beginning to move away from being about points. Like, you know, you ever play an old arcade game or like Galaga or something like that, any game that was like on the NES, like Super Mario Brothers, you know, they're about points. And that was much more of a thing, even like in the NES era, that was kind of a holdover from, arcade cabinets, because by the time it was like on a family console, like in your living room, you know, who exactly is leaving high scores on your machine? Just you and your friends, basically. So, you know, whereas like in an arcade, somebody leaves a high score on a machine, you're like, huh, who is JMD? Who is ass? Who is this person, this mysterious high scorer? But yeah, so, and like even thinking back to Super Mario 64, like video games, they used to, like, there's still like, if you lose all your lives in Super Mario 64, nothing really happens. You know, you can get those one-ups and they'll keep replenishing your supply of lives, but I don't, there might be like some reason people do want to get them, like to, you know, if they're speedrunning, to avoid getting reset back to the outside of the castle or whatever. I don't think there's any reward for, like, winning the game without losing, you know, losing all your lives or something. I don't know if that's a thing in Super Mario 64, but they still tracked it just because it was, like, you know, it's like, there's this concept called skeuomorphism, which is where something resembles an item or a process that no longer, like, has any symbolic connection to, you know, like, the save icon looking like a floppy disk. Like, you're not saving, in a lot of cases, you're saving directly to the cloud, which is, yes, like, on a disk, kind of similar to a floppy disk, but much more powerful. Or you're saving onto a hard drive, which definitely does not use, you know, an insertable floppy disk. But that's how computers used to write things into memory. They would, you know, put it on a floppy disk. And that is not, that function is completely divorced these days from the original context. And yet the save icon is still a floppy disk in a lot of cases, because that's how people recognize, that's how the average user will recognize, oh, this is how I save my work. Same with, like, something being, you know, like the camera icon on an iPhone being, like, you know, a box film camera with a lens. And, like, that's not really what you're doing, you know, that's not really what the camera is anymore, but people recognize it with that symbol. And, you know, I think as we're moving into as we've been in this time where technology is all kind of like, you know, everything's a Swiss Army knife in a sense. I think there's some charm and utility in like moving some of these symbols, like using some of these symbols to just communicate, like, yes, this is the camera function, not, yes, you know, initiate the take a picture app or whatever, the imaging app, you know what I mean? So that's why those are probably going to continue to stick around, even after people no longer, you know, look at that and say, oh, I get it, this is how I take a picture. It's like with a film camera. No, nobody's going to think of it that way. Anyway, so skeuomorphism. Yeah, points, one-ups, lives in video games. And that, at some point, just was no longer really... It was starting to turn into, maybe you'd get points so you could get 100% completion on the game. So you could explore every area, have enough gems to, like, buy every upgrade or whatever. But another thing that old video games were kind of notorious for was just having, like, secrets and unlockables in the game that the game gave you no guidance towards. Like, nowadays, you know, if you want to unlock things, it's pretty straightforward. There's, like, a battle pass that you have to pay real money for or in-game currency for. It's been monetized for the most part. Or, you know, it's about completion, and everybody gets that, and the goals are usually, like, the achievements are usually, you know, pretty straightforward. Or it's idiosyncratic, it's just, it depends on the game. You know, a game that, I'm trying to think of one, an individual game will have unlockables. You know, like, Team Fortress 2 doesn't have a battle pass. The unlockables, they just say, like, hey, log in on Halloween and you'll get this jack-o'-lantern hat or whatever. So, it's a game-by-game kind of thing. But yeah, when I was playing video games as a kid, there were definitely games where you could unlock characters, but you just had to hear, it was like hearsay. People would stumble into doing it, and it would create all these myths and legends that circulated around the, you know, kids playing the game. And that was really fun and charming. And led me astray totally at different points. Like, there would be times where, you know, people would say, oh yeah, there's like a hidden course in Mario Kart 64. You just have to, like, run through this, like, you know, drive through this rainbow. That's actually just part of the background texture, and you can't, there's no way you can actually drive through it. There's nothing through there. Another thing, you'd have some old video games where they would have, like, a cheat input, and so at the start of the game, as you were booting up, you could say, like, you could plug in, like, I want all my, you know, like, Diddy Kong Racing had this. It would say, like, you know, you put in vitamin B, it makes all bananas more powerful, like, accelerate you more than normal. Or, like, there was, like, a Tony Hawk Pro Skater Game Boy Advance game, I think, and you could, like, plug in some cheat that would let you, like, turn off blood in the game. And the blood was not realistic, but it was this little animated red, like, kind of splatter that would happen when you wipe out. And if you wanted to turn that off for whatever reason, you'd have to, like, go into the main menu and, like, type in no blood or something. Or something that was, like, not even, like, explicit. It was more euphemistic, like, angel wings or something. And you know, turn that off. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself, but, so Dragon Ball Z Legendary Super Warriors, it was a late title for the Game Boy Color. It was basically the full story of Dragon Ball Z, condensed down to 30 stories with 2 bonus stories. So each story, like, it would It would include some, you know, background on the game. Or some... Each story would include some background on, like, characters and stuff, but also, like, tell just a fragment of the Dragon Ball Z story. So what's wild is, like, when you turn the game on, like, the loading... Not loading, but, like, the intro sequence kind of starts exploring, like, oh, there's the Dragon Balls, and, like, you know, once upon a time there was a young boy who, you know, went on adventures with his friends. Kind of tells, like, the whole story of Dragon Ball in, like, you know, in a couple of lines. And then, you know, jumps forward in time and is like, one day this boy's, as an adult, this boy's brother came and told him he was one of, you know, this alien race called Saiyans. And so the whole story of Raditz is also kind of told in retrospective. And mind you, this is all like a skippable, like, intro cutscene that you can just hit A or start or whatever and, like, totally skip through and go to the main menu. You could totally miss Raditz completely because he's not a character, a playable character in the game. There's no Raditz battle. It picks up from where Piccolo takes Gohan to train him. So this is kind of like the tutorial level. Like, you fight as Piccolo against, or as Gohan against Piccolo, and it's a fairly easy battle. And he gives you kind of an introductory deck because it's a card game, and you know, gives you pointers on how to play your cards and stuff. There are a couple stories throughout the game where you are put onto the, like, an overworld, and you can move your character around this map, this usually pretty small area. Usually the gimmick is, like, you're looking for someone who's hidden. You're looking for Cell's, like, you know, time travel, time machine thing. Or you're trying to find, like, someone who's hidden their energy level and is like, in hiding. And usually if you, like, go and examine certain conspicuous nooks, you'll find different cards on the ground there that might be rare. That only happens a few times throughout the game, though, like maybe a handful. For the most part, the game is these interstitial cutscenes where, like, characters' faces just come up on screen and there's dialogue, and it, in kind of like broad strokes, tells the story of Dragon Ball Z. You know, skipping all the filler and everything. And then it, you know, once that scene kind of plays out, you go into a battle. So, like, to start with, your Gohan against Piccolo, he's giving you pointers. It's a fairly easy battle. You know, like, later down the line, say you've gathered, like, a crew of characters. You've got, like, you know, Goku, Vegeta, Gohan, Krillin. So, yeah, I think Krillin is one of the early characters you receive. I think by episode 2, you're, like, fighting Nappa. I don't think the Cybermen are in the game. So you fight Nappa, and I think you have access to Gohan or Krillin you can play as. And then after that episode, Goku finally arrives, and you have to fight Vegeta as Goku. That's a harder one. You get access to Goku as a character. There's certain points in the storyline where characters will reach a new form or a new, like, level of Super Saiyan or something. Like, right before you fight Cell for the last time, Gohan reaches Super Saiyan 2. So that's, like, a more advanced form. Your stats are increased because each character has stat lines for HP, strength, which is your physical attack, Kai, or Ki, I don't know, for your beam attacks, your energy attacks, and speed as well. So, like I said, this is a turn-based card game, and I think this was pretty common around that time, late 90s, early 2000s. There was, like, the Pokemon TCG on Game Boy, which I've never played, but that sounds interesting to see how that was executed. Like, what cards were available? How good was the AI? This is always kind of an interesting question to me. And, of course, there was, like, a Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game, or Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG, like, video game. I think those... I need to go back and take a look at those, because I wonder how good the AI could possibly be for video games that... For video games that are based off of trading card games meant to be played by actual people, even children, like... Any game, most games are not Turing complete, meaning that, like, computers cannot, you know, make the correct decision every time. So I think Dragon Ball Z Legendary Super Warriors makes kind of an interesting call in some of those aspects, in that it is a video game first and foremost, and so some of the attacks you use have to calculate, like, your strength versus an enemy's HP, and, like, deduct accordingly, and also your position on the field, in a way that would be difficult to, replicate in paper. Although that hasn't stopped me from thinking, like, what would Legendary Super Warriors look like if it was a paper trading card game? Anyway, more on that maybe later, but... So what you do, you move around this field, you have four quadrants, and your enemy also has four quadrants. The lower, and you're always on the left side facing right. And that's true. This is also a game that has a multiplayer capability. You can cable up with another player and play against them. And their deck and their characters they have unlocked, which is very cool. So yeah, where was I? So you're always on the left. The four quadrants, you have the lower left, which is on the ground, the lower right also on the ground, and then the top two zones are in the air. And so both of the leftmost zones, farthest from the enemy, those give you increased guard. Guard is a stat that I don't think is given a number to. It is kind of more... guard is your value for guard is based on where you are positioned on the map, whether or not on defense you're using the guard action, and other things. There are cards that you can use to raise your own guard or to lower your opponent's guard, and I think those are more playable than they are in Pokemon, for instance, where, you know, you're only playing 1v1 on, you know, it's not like your opponent can just switch out their thing and all their, you know, stat decreases have been reset. Excuse me. Pardon. Okay. So you've got your guard zones. Lower left is guard is increased. Guard against beams is also increased. Lower right, attack, both attack stats are increased, but your guard against beams is increased. Upper left, guard is increased, and your guard against strength attacks is increased. Upper right, your... strength is increased and your guard against physical attacks is also increased. So between these four zones, you've got, like, do you want to be someplace that sets you up to do more damage? And note that, like, both the top level and the bottom bottom level positions, two each respectively, those raise your guard against certain types of attacks. For some reason, I always thought as a kid that it was, like, rather than top and bottom raising your defense, I thought it was different. Anyway, I don't want to confuse the subject, but, so, yeah, if you're setting up for, like, a really strong energy attack, like a super Kamehameha wave or something, then you probably want to be in the lower right, like the forward quadrant. That is the only quadrant that gives you a bonus to your energy attacks. It's a little risky because, you know, though it does raise your guard against all attacks, you know, it doesn't specifically raise your guard against physical attacks, so you gotta be kind of keeping an eye on what the enemy might be doing, and, you know, you end up with this situation where you're kind of dynamically moving around the map to kind of triangulate towards where is going to be your area of greatest benefit, but also where your opponent might not want to be. So that's one aspect. You can only move on the defense. And you give up your opportunity to use guard if you move. And the other move you can use on defense is guard. Like I said, it raises your guard stat just for that turn. You kind of, like, square up, you know, in case an enemy uses an attack against you, you're not going to take quite as much damage. There are other cards that you have in your deck that you draw over the course of the game. Every like start of your attack phase, portion of the round, your turn on attack, you draw a card from your deck. Those cards could be attacks. They could be, like, beams or physical attacks. They could be stat cards that either boost your stats or lower your enemies. They could be cards that, perform some other, you know, unique effect, like draining your opponent's health, healing your own health, raising your HP. There's a card called Roshi's Book. That's like the dirty magazines he reads, and the question, it has like a random effect, a bunch of question marks. I think I'm not sure exactly. It deals a bunch of random damage, I believe. So it could be really weak. You never know. But what's also funny about this game is each card, like, you can see what the base attack stat, the base attack of that card is, the base accuracy, you know, what the cost is to using it, and also, like, you know, which characters can use it. So that's another interesting thing. You have, like, a move like, Kamehameha, that can be used by, like, a whole slew of characters. Goku and Krillin both learn that move. Gohan, both Kid Gohan and Adult Gohan, or Teen Gohan, I guess, know that move. Goten, Gotenks, Vegito, any characters that have absorbed any form of one of those characters, such as Super Buu with Gohan absorbed, can use Kamehameha. Same with Cell and Cell Jr., since Cell was created with DNA from Goku. So any character who absorbed any of those other characters, like Super Buu with Gohan absorbed, can use Kamehameha, as can Cell and Cell Jr., because those characters both were created with DNA from Goku. So, yeah, there's also moves that are more like signature moves that only certain characters are capable of using. There's like Final Desperation Attack, which is Vegeta, and I think it's locked to being used by, like, Vegeta's forms that you have access to are regular, you know, Saiyan Prince Vegeta, Super Saiyan, which you get unlocked during the Android Saga, I think as part of the story as it progresses. And then finally, Majin. Even though I believe he has access to Super Saiyan 2 at some point, the ability that you get, or the final, like, form that you get for Vegeta is Majin, which I think is called, like, Destruction or Evil Prince, because everywhere in this, everything in this game is, like, severely character limited. So, like, Piccolo and, you know, attack names in Dragon Ball Z and forms in Dragon Ball Z are famously very long-winded. So, like, Piccolo has his special beam cannon attack, which in this is abbreviated to, like, S dot beam can. Something like that. You just have to kind of know and read between the lines a little bit. But that's why some of the card's descriptions are very incomplete or misleading, even. There are cards that don't really explain what they do. and you just have to learn from playing them. So any of the characters' attacks that are, any of the characters' attacks that are, like, sort of signature moves, even if they're available to a wide swath of characters like Kamehameha, those attacks can be set as your limited attacks. So you basically have three types of moves. There are the basic moves, which during defense are movement or guard, and during attack are the stage attack or power up, gather power. Stage attack, that's like your basic move for, like, dealing a little bit of chip damage, but mainly the point is that it's a way to gain card costs, to gain your, like, power towards, you know, using your cards. Gather power is a move that raises your stage attack from, or raises the availability of stage attack from 3 to 4. So you can then use that stage attack to eke out just a little bit extra card cost when you do it. Because, of course, playing Gather Power, you know, you don't... When you play Gather Power, you... Like, you don't gain card cost that turn. It just kind of sets you up. For one thing, Gather Power does increase your other stats. Increases your attack stats both by +8, I believe. Again, not something that's in the game. Something that you just need to, like, read message boards to know. Post from, like, 2009, when people were still playing the game. The other thing is, there are moves that you can set. I mentioned the limited moves. So anything that's, like, a character-specific move, there's also, like, you know, say Vegeta's, like, Gallic Gun. Oh, I think I mentioned the different forms of the characters. Vegeta, Majin Vegeta, can use this move called Final Desperation Attack, which is, he goes down to literally 1 HP, and it deals, like, just an enormous amount of damage. It's the strongest, I think the strongest move in the game. But you only use it if you think you're going to kill the opponent with it, or if you think you can, like, then survive long enough to finish them off. Like, if you can survive one more move and then use another attack. But, you know, say Vegeta's Gallic Gun. That is a character-specific move to Vegeta. That is a move that you can set as a limited move. So you can add Gallic Gun cards to your deck so that if you have the cost to pay them, you can use it. And it's a beam attack, so again, you want to, you know, position yourself appropriately to get the most advantage out of that attack. Most attacks are like, you know, 20 to 30 damage, something like that. Most characters have roughly, you know, like 100 to 120 HP. And so you're basically kind of trading blows back and forth. There are things that you can do to boost your attack capabilities, and there are things that your opponents can do to, you know, like, take more or less damage as well. There are also, like, smaller, kind of cheap attacks that you can put in your deck that are available to anyone, like a continuous punch or a continuous kick. Those are pretty weak, but they don't take that many card costs to use. My preferred playstyle is and has always been to just bide time, you know, survive whatever the opponent throws at you for some time, build up a lot of card costs so that you can gather power and then unleash like two limited attacks, you know, one turn after the other. So you gather power, you know, you go into defense, you move, or you guard, whatever. The next turn, if you have enough card costs available, you can use a limited attack. You can also use your four-stage attack to boost you up further. The other thing is, at the start of every turn, start of every attack, you gain three. So just, you know, along with drawing a card. So just by nature of, like, playing the game and, you know, surviving, like, you are going to slowly gain card costs. Once you have enough, you can use the cards that you've drawn, which could be, as mentioned, stat cards. They could be attack cards of different types, like Continuous Kick is available to everyone. And it's just kind of like this physical combo of, like, kick attacks, for not a ton of damage. Like, any character's special attacks are going to be more powerful, at least slightly, than Continuous Kick. So let's see. Apart from that, the stage attacks, you have access to three stage attacks as one of your basic moves on your attack. Three stage attack, there's four stage attack you gain access to when you use Gather Power. There are also cards for five and six stage attack that you can put in your deck, and they, of course, they're longer, you know, combo attacks, but they do accelerate your gaining. Like, six-stage attack gains you twice as many card costs as, you know, your basic three-stage attack. The downside is, and, you know, another element of play with the stage attack moves is that you have to, like, hit this button combo, and you only have a certain amount of time to do it. So, like, when you use that move, your character, like, prepares the attack, and then suddenly this, like, you know, however, whatever number stage you're doing, like, say you do a four-stage attack, a four-button combo appears on your screen. Now, there's only a certain number of button combos in the game that they make available, and they never use left, so it's always up, down, right, A, B, some combination of those keys for your stage attack. The closer you are to your opponent, like, say you're in the forward beam attack position and they're in the forward, like, strength attack position, if you are, like, one zone away from them, one quadrant away, then you're going to have, like, up to 3 seconds to input this combo from the moment you see it. If you are, you know, like, three zones apart, like, you're both in the back corner, you're going to have, like, a second. So, it can be difficult. you know, you're probably not going to land a six-stage combo unless you're really good. The other thing is, once you, like, zoom in to approach them, even if you mess up some button along the way, you can hit A to either bank however many, you know, hits you've landed. So if you just goof up on the last one, you know, you can hit A at the moment you would make that final attack to just bank, you know, however many you have successfully landed so far. You can also hit B to try to, you know, finish the combo, which sometimes if you mess up one button in a combo, you can get the B. It's difficult to do multiple in a row, though. So if you, like, mess up, like, three out of the six, you're probably, you know, unless your timing is really good, you're probably not going to land, you know, those missing stages of the combo. So something to consider when playing this game, that, you know, you gain fewer card costs through using, like, 3 and 4 stage attack. I never put 6 stage attacks in my deck because you either have to position yourself forward, which makes you more prone to taking damage, or you have to be really good on the buttons, and I am just not that good. What else is next? So, yeah, apart from, like, the cards you can put in your deck that you draw on your attack, they can be different types of attacks. They can be those stat cards that I mentioned. They can also be, like, defense cards. And the defense cards in the game are ones that allow you to, that allow you to negate an opponent's attack. The computer players are pretty notorious for gathering power on their next attack using a 4-stage attack that they have access to, and then on the final turn, so gather power only lasts for 2 additional attack steps. They're notorious for using gather power, that first attack step after gathering power, and then on the third and final turn, they'll use some big attack. And a lot of characters are prone to use beams. A lot of characters just have higher Kai stat than strength. So, like, beams are fairly common. So there are some defensive attacks, such as there's Shockwave, which costs 5 and negates completely a strength attack, like a physical, you know, attack like Cell Combo or like Nappa Slasher. There's avoiding, which allows you to blip out of the way of a beam completely. And then there's endurance, which, if you don't know what type of move they're going to use, because if you use avoiding and they use a physical attack, that's going to feel kind of silly. You'll take full damage for that. But you can do endurance if you're not sure what kind of attack they're going to use. And that, I think you take like half damage from the attack. So it you know, protects you a little bit, but not totally. It's a very fun, I was going to say card game. It's a very fun video game. I would recommend checking it out, but I am at my destination and I need to be running. So thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks as always to Scott Suter for the intro and outro themes. Find him on SoundCloud at Scott Suter and Instagram and TikTok at Copenhagen Cool Ranch. Find my website online at www.letmeexplainyouathing.com. If you're falling asleep, hope you guys enjoyed this white noise. Otherwise, have a great day, take it easy, and I'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.